So I want to take up in volume 11, February the 2nd, 1917. The world has become unbalanced because it has lost the thought of the passion. As I was in my usual state, I found myself outside of myself, and I found my beloved Jesus all dripping with blood, with a horrible crown of thorns, looking at me with difficulty through the thorns. He told me, "My daughter, the world has become unbalanced because it has lost the thought of my passion." Well, I don't know what word you'd use nowadays, a century later. I don't know what word you would even use. Unbalanced mightn't be half strong enough. So he lists this. He lists five things. So the first one is, they're in darkness. It has not found the light of my passion, which would illuminate it, and as it would make known to it my love and how much souls cost me, it might turn to loving the one, that's Jesus himself, who has truly loved it. And the light of my passion guiding it would put it on guard against all dangers. So the first effect of that is spiritual darkness, okay? Now, the second one is spiritual weakness. It has not found the strength of my passion which would sustain it. The third one is impatience. And this is what we're finding. People are not having patience about anything. It has not found the mirror of my patience which would infuse in it calm and resignation. And in the face of my patience, feeling ashamed, it would make it its duty to dominate itself. That means to have self-control. And one of the things you see missing in people today is self-control. And that's why you have all these attacks and murders and so on. The fourth thing is, it has not found the comfort of the pains of God, which sustaining its pains would infuse in it the love of suffering. Number five, in sin it has not found my sanctity, which placing itself in front of it would infuse in it hatred of sin. Man has made an abuse of everything. We'd agree with that, wouldn't we? Because in everything he has moved away from the one who could help him. Now, there's the source of the troubles we have today. They've literally moved away from God. They've moved away from grace. They've moved away from salvation. So they're left then with just simply the brute human being. This is why the world has lost its balance. It behaved like a child who no longer wanted to recognize its mother, or like a disciple denying his master, though that's the Judas position then, no longer wanted to listen to his teaching or learn his lessons. And that's the position with so many Christians today, that they just don't want to hear about Christianity. What will happen to this child and to this disciple? They will be the sorrow of themselves and the terror and sorrow of society. It's very interesting. The terror of society is the awful things that they will be left doing. Man is getting worse and worse, and I cry over him with tears of blood, Jesus said. And we know that in the last century, that statues of Jesus crying tears of blood and of Blessed Mother crying tears of blood have been found in many places. So February the 24th, 1917. In receiving communion, the soul must be consumed in Jesus and give him the complete glory of his sacramental life in the name of all. So notice, must be consumed in Jesus. Having received communion, Louisa said, I was holding my sweet Jesus tightly to my heart, and I said, my life, how I wish I could do what you yourself did in receiving yourself sacramentally, so that you may find your own contentment, your own prayers, and your own reparations in me. And my always beloved Jesus told me, my daughter, in this small circle of the host, I enclose everything. That's why we don't need to be running around to shrines. Everything is in the host. And this is why I wanted to receive myself, to do complete acts. A complete act is a divine act. that would glorify the Father worthily, and as souls would receive their God. You have to put their God. Ah, God, it's not English. And I gave to them the complete fruit of my sacramental life. Otherwise, it would have been incomplete for the glory of the Father and for the good of souls. This is why in each host you will find my prayers, my thanksgiving, you don't need the S on the thanksgiving, and everything else which was needed to glorify the Father and which the soul was supposed to do for me. So, if the soul fails, I continue my crafting in each host as if I were receiving myself for each soul, but we can receive him for each soul as well in the divine will. Therefore, the soul must transform herself in me. Yes, you're fusing. Form one single thing with me, all of me in all of you. Make my life, my prayers, my moans of love, my pains her own, as well as my heartbeats of fire with which I would want to ignite them. But I find no one who abandons herself as prey to my flames. Now, there's the challenge. It's one thing to take, in receiving Holy Communion, it's one thing to take everything that is Jesus' and make it my own, but do I abandon myself as prey to his flames? Do I abandon myself to this incredible love? Because if I do, he will transform me into love. In this host, I am reborn. I live, I die, and I consume myself. But I find no one who consumes herself for me. Now notice the complete giving that is being asked there. And if the soul repeats what I do, I feel myself being repeated, as if I were receiving myself once again, and I find complete glory, divine contentment, outpourings of love that match me. And I give to the soul the grace to be consumed from my own consummation. So he's asking us to enter deeply into him, fuse ourselves completely in him, and ask him to complete everything he wants to do in this sacrament in us, which can only happen when we are fused in his divine will. So let's turn to volume 12. And of course, the only reason why it is volume 12 is that her notebook ran out. There isn't anything special between the last message and the next one. It's just the size of the notebooks they gave her. So if you have that notebook on the table, when it's finished, it's finished. You have to go on to another one. So we're not going to be jumping sky high into volume 12. But as we go into it, we're going deeper and deeper into this wonderful mystery of the divine will. Now, we're into 1917. Two major revolutions happened in 1917. March and October, you have the terrible Bolshevik Revolution that changed not only Russia and all its satellite states, but changed the world as well. How the tight union between the soul and God is never broken. Now, the tight union means that the divine will and the human will have clicked in permanently. It's not going to change. Okay. So you become inseparable with the Lord. My usual state continues, Louisa said, and my beloved Jesus makes himself seen almost like a flash and flying past. And if I lament, he tells me, my daughter, my daughter, my daughter, poor daughter. If you knew what will happen, you would suffer very much. What will happen is the Bolshevik Revolution. Okay. And I, in order not to make you suffer so much, try to escape. In other words, I don't let you see everything. You wouldn't be able to take it. So as I returned to lament, saying to him, my life, I did not expect this from you. You who seemed to be incapable and unable to be without me. And now hours and hours, and sometimes it seems you want to let the entire day go by. She sees him every single day and she complains. Don't know if you have a comment about that. It's incredible, isn't it? Jesus, she says, don't do this to me. I find that amazing. But at least you are listening to someone who is truly in love. How you have changed, she said. And Jesus surprises me and says, calm yourself. I've not changed. I am immutable. Now, he's told her this many times, hasn't he? Even more, I tell you that when I communicate myself to the soul and I have kept her clasped with me, that is in the divine will. I have spoken to her. I've poured out my love. This is never broken between me and the soul. There's your Romans 8:39. Nothing can separate us from the love of Christ. Nothing. At the most, I change the way, now one way and then another, but I always keep inventing how to speak to her and pour myself out to her in love. But don't you yourself see that if I do not, if I've not told you everything in the morning, I'm almost waiting for the evening to say a word to you. There you have two lovers desperately needing to communicate. And when they read the applications of my passion, since I am with you, I pour myself up to the brim of your soul, and I speak to you about the most intimate things which I had not manifested until now. Very important. The thing that Jesus had not manifested until Louisa was the interior passion that he suffered. The whole church knew about his external passion, but knew nothing about the interior passion. So that's the great gift to the world. One of them anyway. I'd not manifested until now, and how the soul must follow me in that operating of mine. In other words, how we must enter into that interior passion. Those applications will be the mirror of my interior life. And whoever will reflect himself in it will copy my own life within himself. Oh, how they will reveal my love and my thirst for souls. And in each fibre of my heart, in each of my breaths, thoughts, etc. Therefore, I speak to you more than ever. But as soon as I finish, I hide. And you, not seeing me, tell me that I've changed. Even more, I tell you that when you do not want to when you do not want to repeat with your voice what I say to you in your interior, you hinder my outpouring of love. So Louisa never got used to the hide and seek that Greg seems to have accepted very easily. And so Jesus is reminding her of this incredible gift that he's given to the church through her. So March the 18th, 1917, the effects of fusing oneself in Jesus. Very important message. I was praying, fusing all of myself in Jesus, and I wanted each thought of Jesus in my power. Look at that, in my power. So as to be able to find life in each thought of the people, to be able to repair with the very thought of Jesus and so with all the rest. Now, this is the translator being as awkward as he can possibly get. May God forgive him. She says, I fuse myself in the thoughts of Jesus because through that I want to reach the thoughts of all human beings. And I want to bring his thoughts to them to cure their thoughts. It's actually a simple statement, but it's said awkwardly. Is that okay? So in Jesus' thoughts, we find the thoughts of all. And Jesus said, my daughter, my humanity on earth did nothing other than link each thought of the creature with my own. So each thought of theirs reverberated in my mind. Each word in my voice, each heartbeat in my heartbeat, each action in my hands, each step in my feet, and so with all the rest. Now that's Psalm 139. You know my thoughts before I think them, my words before I say them, and this knowledge is too great for me. Psalm 139. With this, Jesus said, I gave to the Father divine reparations for every thought, every word, every heartbeat, every action of ours. If you give that a bit of thought, you'll be impressed. With this, I gave the Father divine reparations. Now, everything I did upon the earth, I continue in heaven. And as souls think, their thoughts pour into my mind, No harm to remember that every now and then, is it? As they look, I feel their gazes in mine, and as though a continuous electricity flows between me and them, as the members are in continuous communication with the head. And I say to the Father, my Father, I'm not the only one who prays you, repairs, satisfies, appeases you, but there are other souls who do so within me, what I do. Okay? The church has always told us that everything we think, say and do should be through him, with him and in him. Mm-hmm. And that's even before we got to the divine will level. So he says, even more, with their suffering, they make up for my humanity. I want to give you a couple of verses for that. Colossians 1:24, Philippians 3:10. So Colossians 1:24, Philippians 3:10. Galatians 6:17 and Ephesians 6:20. Now, just a tiny little reflection there. If all our thoughts, words, actions, motivations, everything flow in Jesus' thoughts, words and everything, don't you think that prayer is easy? I don't have to come a long distance to find him. My thoughts are already there. Have you ever, do you say to him, but you know what I'm thinking?
Yeah, you know yourself.
Yeah. But you know what I want to say. So actually it makes prayer very, very simple. It means connection is immediate. He's already reading your thoughts. Because we have a couple of instances in the gospel where you have it in chapter 2 of Mark, for example, where Jesus is dealing with a crippled man. And he reads the thoughts of the scribes and Pharisees. And he said, this is what's going on in your head. They must have hated him. That not even their thoughts were private. Because they didn't realise just who he was. You know what I mean? But it should make prayer very simple for us. The other side of that coin is that to make a pretense in the presence of God is utter folly. Because he sees the pretense and he sees what's going on in your head at the same time. So to try and get around him and pretend that we're not actually saying what we're saying, you know, to do what we do with human beings is utter folly. And so the only thing that really works with him is direct communication. You know, whenever I am confronting a situation that I don't know what to do with, I just say to him, put the thoughts into my mind. And I just give it a minute or two. Put the words on my lips and give it a minute or two. You'll be surprised at the response you will give to the situation. You know? So, and it's just this thing that he all our thoughts and everything flow in his. And he said, by fusing herself in me, the soul repeats what I did and what I continue to do. But what will be the contentment of these souls who have lived their lives in me, embracing together with me all souls, all reparations, when they are with me in heaven? They will continue their life in me, and as souls will think or will offend me with their thoughts, these will reverberate in their minds, and they will continue the reparations that they did on earth. Now, I think that's absolutely beyond brilliant. Here we are on earth, trying to live in the divine will, understanding that when we live fused with him, and we must fuse as often as possible, that we find all souls in him, and we find their thoughts, their everything. And he says, even when you get to heaven, their thoughts will still be reverberating in your minds, and the acts in the divine will that you did on earth, the reparations will continue as long as human beings are on the planet. I think that's fantastic. It reminds me of St. Therese saying that I will spend my heaven in doing good upon earth. You know, in other words, I will continue to try and save souls as long as there are souls to be saved. The souls in the divine will be together with me, Jesus said, the sentries of honour before the divine throne. And as souls on earth will offend me, they will do the opposite acts in heaven. Isn't that interesting? Mm. They will guard my throne and they will have a place of honour. They will be the ones who will understand me the most and they will be the most glorious. Their glory will be all fused in mine and mine in theirs. Now I want to give you Revelation chapter 3, verses 20 and 21, where Jesus says that for certain souls, he will let them share his throne. And this is what he's saying here. He will guard my throne. So let your life be all fused in mine. Now notice he says your life, not just a few bits of it. Not just a few minutes here and there. Let your life be all fused in mine. Do not do one act without making it pass into me. So this whole paragraph, I have a VIP on it. And every time you fuse yourself in me, I will pour into you new grace, new light, and will make myself the vigilant sentry of your heart so as to keep any shadow of sin away from you. I will guard you as my own humanity. Isn't that fantastic? I will command the angels to form a circle around you. Thank you, Lord. That's Hebrews 1:14. The angels are sent as guardians to look after us. That you may be defended from everything and from everyone. Now that defending from everything and everyone is interior. Like somebody can slap you on the hand. Do you know what I mean? They can get at your body, but they can't get at your will and your love. So notice he's saying there that the key to reaching the heights of the divine will is to stay fused. Very simple. You see, nothing that's here is actually difficult. It's just that I find, how am I going to remember all the bits? You know, that's why it's so important to keep reading. So March 28, 1917, the I love you of Jesus. Continue in my usual state, my beloved Jesus just barely made himself seen, but so afflicted as to arouse pity. And I said, what's wrong, Jesus? And he said, my daughter, there will be and will happen unexpected things. Now, you're talking about this Bolshevik revolution. And to be all of a sudden, and it was all of a sudden. And revolutions will break out everywhere. Oh, how things will get worse. And all afflicted, he remained in silence. And Louisa said, life of my life, tell me another word, not all about these revolutions. And Jesus answered her, as though breathing over me, he said, I love you. But in that I love you, it seemed that everyone and all things received new life. Because you see, God loves everybody. And so Louisa repeated, Jesus, say one more word. And he said, more, a more beautiful word than I love you, I could not tell you. And this I love you of mine fills heaven and earth. It circulates in the saints and they receive new glory. It descends into the hearts of pilgrim souls and some receive the grace of conversion. Now watch, they receive different things according to their dispositions, okay? Some receive the grace of sanctification. It penetrates into purgatory and it pours over the souls like a beneficent dew. Isn't that beautiful? And they feel refreshment from it. Even the elements feel invested with new life in fertilizing and in growing. So all perceive the I love you of your Jesus. And you know when the soul draws an I love you of mine from herself, when fusing herself in me, she takes on the divine attitude and dissolving herself in me, she does everything I do. So every time we fuse, then we cause this great I love you of God to come down upon the whole of humanity. They need it more than they need air, don't they? So Louisa said, my love, many times it's difficult to always maintain this divine attitude. And there's Louisa clicking into the rest of us. It's not that difficult for her being in a bed and undisturbed by anybody. But the Lord explains later on that he often got Louisa to ask him questions that applied to us rather than herself. And when I read that verse, I just said, wow, she clicked into our problems. Okay? So Jesus said, and this is very, very important, it's for those days when you get out of the bed backways, the day is too full, nothing seems to work, and you say to yourself, oh, I forgot to fuse even for the last couple of hours. You know what I mean? So how are you going to handle it? He said, my daughter, what the soul cannot always do with her immediate acts, she can make up for with the attitude of her goodwill. Now, shouldn't you really colour that one? She can make up with the attitude of her goodwill. And I will be so pleased with it as to make myself the vigilant sentry of each thought, each word and each heartbeat. In other words, he'll give the same response as he would do if you had fused. Because he knows that if you could sit down for 5 minutes, you might remember you ought to be fusing. Mm-hmm. And he knows us. And I will place them inside and outside of me as my cortege, looking at them with so much love as the fruit of the goodwill of the person. Now, it's only the fruit of goodwill because can't be the fruit of fusing because you didn't fuse. OK, but you're not losing completely, as you can see. When the soul then, fusing herself in me, does her immediate acts with me, then I feel so drawn to her. Would you put a ring around the little word then? After you've done the fusing. In other words, when you get back to clicking in, then I feel so drawn to her that I do what she does together with her, and I transmute the operating of the soul into the divine. So for the times that you forget, he actually takes your goodwill into account and looks after you. But then he wants you to fuse again, go back up onto the divine level. I take everything into account, he said. I reward everything, even the smallest things. Remember he said a cup of cold water? Okay. And even just one good act of the will does not remain defrauded by the soul. I think that's fantastic. It's the sheer generosity of the Lord towards us. Okay. So April the 2nd, 1917, the pains of privation of Jesus are divine pains. And this is why it's so impossible for Louisa. It's because it's not just a human pain. It's on another level. So Louisa said, I was lamenting to my beloved Jesus about his usual privations and was saying to him, my love, what a continuous death. Each privation of you is a death that I feel. But such a cruel and ruthless death that while it makes me feel the effects of death, it doesn't let me die. So I want to give you Psalm 63 and Psalm 42. My soul cries out to you, Psalm 63. Psalm 42, I have nothing but tears night and day. You remember that one? Mm-hmm. Okay. I've not understood how the goodness of your heart can endure seeing me suffer so many continuous deaths. And then make me still continue to live. And blessed Jesus came, and at long last he tells her something she doesn't really know about the privations. And this is very important. My daughter, Jesus said, press yourself to my heart and draw life. That's John 14:6. I am the way, the truth and the life. You know, however, that the pain most satisfying, most pleasing and most powerful, the one that equals me the most and can stand before me, is the pain of my privation. In other words, she's been complaining about a great privilege because, he said, it is a divine pain. You must know that souls are so bound with me as to form many links connected together within my humanity. And as souls become lost, they break these links, and I feel the pain as if one member were detaching itself from another. That's 1 Corinthians 12, 12 to 30. That's the body of Christ and all its links. Now, who can join these links for me? Who can weld them in such a way as to make the split disappear? Who can make them enter into me again and to give them life? It is the pain of my privation because it is divine. It's not just human. My pain because of the loss of souls is divine. The pain of the soul who cannot see me, cannot feel me, is divine. And since both of them are divine pains, they can kiss each other, join together, stand before each other, and have such power as to take the souls unlinked and connect them with my humanity. So he's letting Louisa see the extraordinary power that the privations have if she just offers them to the Lord. So she's got to change the reaction to the privations into divine currency. My daughter, he said, does the privation cost you much? And if it does cost you, do not keep as useless a pain of such great cost. Now that applies to us at our levels of suffering as well. Whatever you have to go through, don't lose at the extraordinary gain that you will get by fusing and uniting it with the sufferings of Jesus. As I give it to you as a gift, now Louisa has never thanked him for this gift, has she? Do not keep it for yourself, but let it fly into the midst of the combatants. In other words, let us save the soldiers on the battlefield. I don't know if this is the first time he has said that. I teach different books at the same time, so I don't know where I'm quoting, but he has told her before that she should let her prayers and her intercessions go and save the soldiers who are out on the battlefields. Snatch souls from amid the bullets, he said, and enclose them in me. And as the weld and the seal, place your pain. Now, you see, many of these soldiers will have violated God's will in all kinds of ways as part of their whole experience of war. And here the Lord is asking Louisa to do the healing and the welding of something together so that these souls can be saved. So they go straight off the battlefield into God. Isn't that fantastic? It's the sheer detail with which the Lord uses our sufferings and our prayer and our intercessions. It's the sheer detail of helping somebody else. So she's saying to him, I feel as if I'm suffering death. And he's saying, but they are suffering death. But they, many of them, either have accidentally or otherwise broken from me. You can weld us together. You have incredible power. And therefore you can save these souls. You can snatch souls from amid the bullets and you can enclose them in me. And as the weld and the seal, place your pain. And then let your pain go around through the whole world to make it catch souls and to bring them all back to me. Now notice, we are redeemed through pain and love. That's the way Jesus redeemed us. Okay? So we are redeemed through pain and love. And that's what he's asking Louisa, use your love and your pain with mine. So as you feel the pains of my privation, you will keep placing the seal of the reconnection. And I have John 15:7 there. Jesus wants us to bear abundant fruit, okay, and fruit that will last. And I'm going to leave it there for tonight.